Stoveleg Media, igniting conversation.
This is True Crime Cast. Jamie and John here with our final episode before Christmas.
Yep, a couple of days away. So merry almost Christmas, Jamie.
Yep, hope everybody has a great one. You know, some years we've done some Christmas-themed episodes, usually with True Crime to go, but I feel like this month we've hit some really good cases, non-Christmas-related, but almost a better Christmas gift, even though it's not directly referencing Christmas.
I think you're absolutely right. I feel like the last few cases have just felt like we've hit our stride, you know?
It only took 8 years and 850 episodes.
I don't know. Every now and then, it just feels the stories and the research just all comes together in a magical way. And I mean, they've been awful. Don't get me wrong. The cases, you know, but I feel like the dialogue that we've had and everything, it's just been interesting. Yeah. Got a lot of feedback, especially last week, about what should or should not constitute like confidentiality between a client and their attorney. So,
and we do have some interviews lined up with some attorneys to dive further in that. So stay tuned for those.
Really, really excited to record those. But I want to hear some other good news. Tell me some ratings and reviews that are positive.
Yeah, I got a couple 5-star reviews that came in. This one comes from Leia. It says, I cannot say enough good things about this show. I've shared this podcast with everyone in my life, my parents, best friends, boyfriend, and everyone. The cases are so well researched, and you can really tell how much you guys put into the show. It's amazing, and I look forward to listening to it for years to come. That's very kind, Leia.
Leia, thank you so much.
Like the princess, I think. This one is from Ringtone Diva. I just found this podcast when it was on my suggested listen list. I like the way they talk about the case. There is an easy cadence to their speaking, and their voices are easy to listen to. I'm very pitch sensitive, so I have a hard time listening to a lot of voices. They banter a little bit, but not too much, and they don't get off topic, which is great. Please keep up the great work.
That was the nicest thing I've ever heard about.
Ringtone Diva. Well, I'm going to give your name a 5-star review.
That name is a 5-star name, and that is exactly why we ask you guys for some help. Every rating and a review that you do gets us into the ears of new listeners, and we really, really appreciate it.
Yep, we really appreciate you guys, and that's we'll continue to put this stuff out. We got another Patreon episode coming up that's going to be fascinating. Going to have some behind-the-scenes look at what's happening with John Paul Miller, so it should be good. If you're not familiar with that, just Google John Paul Miller, and you'll get all you need.
Or if you're not familiar and you don't want to Google it, you can tune in to January's Patreon episode to hear us talk about it. Jamie, speaking of Patreon, I want to say thank you to Karen, who came in at the $3 a month level and took advantage of the 15% discount for an annual membership. So thank you, Karen. All right, man. State fairs. This takes me to a time where it's warmer than I am right now. So it's going to be brutal when we get there, but let's get the ball rolling.
State fair weather. The Oklahoma State Fair has been an annual tradition since 1907. Today, we're going to talk about two infamous cases that started at the fairgrounds at the Oklahoma State Fair. The first one starts before you or I were born, shortly before we were born, 1981, on September the 26th. Two 13-year-old friends were so excited to be going to the fair without their parents for the first time.
Dude, I mean, isn't that what life was like growing up? Like, you could just be dropped off at a state fair and have $5 in your pocket and just the world of freedom.
You know, my kids went, it was the county fair, but really for the first time off on their own. Like, they've gone for a little bit with friends before, but this year I feel like they had this level of excitement for the county fair, which I think is kind of lame, but they had a great time.
Absolutely.
Charlotte Kinsey and Cinda Pellette were responsible girls who were dropped off at the fair by Cinda's older brother around noon that day. The plan was for the girls to call their parents at about 5 o'clock to get their rides home. Again, no cell phones, 1981. You're finding a payphone or a phone that's available at the fairgrounds to call home for a ride. Cinda had dark brown hair with blue eyes and stood about 5 feet tall. Charlotte was about 5 feet tall with blonde feathered hair and blue eyes. Charlotte's mom also said that she was diligent about calling her parents anytime there was a change of plan. Charlotte was the type of kid that if she said, I'm going to be home at 4 and it was going to be 4:03, she would call in advance and say, I'm going to be 3 minutes late. And I love that from people in general, whether you're working with them or your kids or whatever, let people know if you're going to be late. So around 5 o'clock, Charlotte called her mom, but told her instead of a ride home, she and Cinda were offered jobs by a carnival worker to come and help unload some stuffed animals from a truck and to make some extra money. So at the time, it sounded harmless enough. Of course, as I was saying it, I felt kind of creeped out, but of course I know what's coming. And in retrospect, this was early on in the stranger danger phase of don't trust strangers. But even then, going with a carny to his truck just sounds bad.
Let me just stop you right there, because I think technically I might be a carny.
Yeah.
So I was
not supposed to give me hesitation on what I said.
Well, I just want to say carnies have a bad rap. Not all carnies are bad. I'd think in this situation, I don't know that I'm letting my kids do this.
Well, I mean, this is somebody who is probably not local to the area, doesn't have ties to the area, is going to be gone in a week. So it's more the transient piece, I think, to the issue.
Yeah.
For most people.
Which is also what I do in my free time.
I'm not taking back anything I said. So Cinda also called her mom, and both women told the girls, go ahead, make a little extra money, be careful, give us a call back around 9, and we'll come pick you up. But they never heard back from either girl at all.
When the parents didn't hear back from the girls, they ended up calling the Oklahoma City Police Department to report both of them missing. And unfortunately, over the next several days, there was a task force that was formed to assist with the case. I have a daughter who's 13 years old, and I know you have kids close to that. This is the worst thing I can imagine, is my kid being gone, having zero idea where they are, and my brain, the way that it's wired, just is going to assume the worst.
Absolutely. Immediately. Yeah.
So they sent both uniformed and undercover officers to patrol the fairgrounds and look for any sign of Charlotte and Cinda. Ray Elliott, with the district attorney's office at the time in Oklahoma City, he was kind of the one who, if there needed to be charges filed, he was going to be right there. He ended up saying that there were hundreds and thousands of people that needed to be interviewed. And we ultimately had witnesses from over 40 states that we had to locate, interview, and to determine if they had any pertinent information to this case. End quote. He noticed that Cinda's room had not been touched since the day she disappeared. Elliot also remembered, he said, quote, she was working on some little crocheted Christmas decorations prior to going to the fair. Miss Pallett gave me one of those Christmas decorations and said, this will be your inspiration, end quote. So even though this is September at the time, she was thinking ahead already to Christmas and giving people those gifts. And that tells me so much about this kid. Responsible, understatement. She was seemingly thoughtful, well organized, not a procrastinator. Like, if I give my kids some kind of an assignment like that, maybe they'll start before Christmas Eve, but not maybe. Likely, you know? Yeah. So man, just this sucks. He still has that decoration to this day.
Yeah. I think it says a lot about how caring she was and where her heart was, and even going to help with the stuffed animals. I'm sure they weren't getting rich off of it. They were asked to help with something and wanted to do it. And I think of this as 1981. You've got thousands of people from 40 states. I think needle in a haystack is, you know, an understatement for that, of trying to find out what happened here, because there are no cameras. There's not security everywhere. There's no facial recognition. There's no phone pictures where you can see people in the background. This is a really uphill battle from the start, and they weren't sure at the beginning if the girls were kidnapped or if they ran away on their own. Of course, that's always on the table anytime there's a missing person, But the parents insisted there was no way these girls would have been willing to run away. They were seemingly happy. They had good home lives. They had plans for the future coming up they were really excited about, and that just did not make sense based on their circumstances and where they were in their lives. Volunteers helped in searching for the girls, and the families posted flyers all over town. Police conducted a booth-by-booth search of the fair and found nothing. Pretty soon, though, they did have some witnesses come forward and said they had some information that might be helpful. It was two boys, and they knew Cinda and Charlotte, and said that they were with a man, and he had actually approached all four of them about helping out. He had found the kids, he promised them a job, and he kind of flashed a yellow name badge to make himself seem official. They said he was around 6'2", white, between 40 and 50 years old, wearing wire-rimmed glasses, and had a black and gray full beard and mustache. They also said he was wearing a brown striped cowboy shirt, a flimsy straw hat, and had a belt on with the name Joseph engraved on it. They said that he drove a Pontiac Grand Prix with South Dakota plates, probably an 80 or an 81. Now, John, if you take away that that name on his belt, I still think that he's like everybody else at the fair, wearing a cowboy shirt, a flimsy straw hat, and driving a Pontiac Grand Prix.
I was going to say, I mean, this sounds like every good Southern Texan or Oklahoma guy, right? But this seems like it should be enough to go off of to find this guy, right?
Yeah, I think the South Dakota plates is helpful. Not a huge population in that state, and obviously the name on the belt, but would they be able to track that down without cameras and surveillance and so forth? So still an uphill battle, but good information to have.
I mean, how many Grand Prix from Oklahoma or from South Dakota are registered to a guy named Joseph?
Yeah.
You know, there's probably more than 20.
More than a handful, but I mean, that narrows it down from the tens of thousands of people at the fair.
And then were you at the Oklahoma State Fair? I mean, I feel like we could find this guy.
Yep.
The man gathered all the kids in his car and then drove to a nearby store to buy gloves. He said the girls would need the gloves to handle the stuffed animals. Around 7:30 p.m., the man dropped off the boys at a truck stop off of the Interstate 40 there. It's called Truck Stops of America. I almost said of Kentucky.
Not even
Truck
close.
Stops of America on I-40. He gave them $10. And told them to wait for him there to bring back the truck full of stuffed animals. Then he drove off with Charlotte and Cinda in the car. The boys got suspicious, so they called their parents to come and get them. Now, when the parents arrived, they waited for an hour to see if the girls ever showed back up, and they did not. And the boys' parents called the police. Based on the description the boys gave, police were able to get a composite drawing of the man. The boys also described the car so well that the police were able to track it down and identify it as a rental car.
There it is.
That's the problem. So the man that was renting it was named Roy Russell Long. Nowhere in there does he have the name Joseph like what was on his belt.
Right. But it does give us a name. It gives us somebody to talk to. And that's exactly what authorities tried to do, and we'll talk about Roy Russell Long when we get back from the break. Once upon a time, Roy Russell Long did work for the carnival, but at the time of this disappearance, he was actually a long-haul truck driver. So great, they have his name, they have a little bit of his background, and they know what his job is. But by the time they found him, John, they found him in somewhere that he wasn't going to be leaving, and that was the Wyoming State Pen. He was serving two life sentences for kidnapping two girls, a 16-year-old and a 12-year-old.
That seems like his MO.
You find the guy in prison for the exact thing you're looking for him for. Seems pretty clear at that point. Now, he admitted, because he was followed up in question about Charlotte and Cinda, he admitted that he was at Oklahoma City the day before they went missing. that he actually went to the state fair the day they disappeared, but he denied having anything to do with this. Long, though, looked just like this composite sketch. That's one science. I know I tend to crap on lie detector exams. I think certain types of scientific evidence is kind of sketchy, but sketches, man, the people who do that are just so talented and genius to be able to interpret my dumb words to make an accurate sketch.
Well, and apparently she did so pretty well if this is actually Long. So I think when you have a composite sketch that matches, I think that's also when you could do a lineup with those boys to say, do any of these people look like who you saw that night?
Well, they went back through their tips and they found that Long's wife, his ex-wife, had actually called police after seeing one of these flyers and say, you know, this guy kind of looks like my ex-husband. So he drove the car. He looked like the sketch and he was there circumstantially, seems to fit pretty well.
That's a pretty good composite sketch when your ex-wife calls and says, hey, looks just like, well, I mean, I guess depending on how that relationship ended.
She may just be calling every sketch and be like, this is probably him. He did it all.
So on May 29, 1985, that's almost 4 years after the girls went missing, Roy Long was officially charged with the kidnapping and murder of Cinda Paulette and Charlotte Kinsey. He was extradited to Oklahoma to stand trial, and the police and the DA's office built a very strong case against Long. And I don't think, based on anything we've talked about, that would be very hard to do. They discovered that he had a long history of sexual violence against young girls, even his own biological daughter. His daughter would actually help investigators by providing details from her childhood. According to court documents, Long's daughter accused him of molesting her from the age of 13 until she was 15. She told investigators about Long's cross-country trips and how she would go with her father. Elliot, again, the DA from earlier, said, quote, she testified that there would be multiple times when they'd be on these cross-country trips and he would see young girls give her money to go play a pinball machine or to buy a soda. And then he would use the old stuffed animal game to lure the girls to get into his truck. When she would come back, the girls would be gone, end quote. Again, that was from the district attorney, Elliot, who was in charge of this case from the get-go. Allegedly, Long also told his own daughter that no female over the age of 13 would ever sexually satisfy him. That is one of the sickest things I've ever heard, and I deal with this kind of crap day in and day out.
Yeah, it's terrible, and I've said it before. God bless you if you're hearing those stories, and they're traumatic to have to revisit that often. And, I mean, the people that go through it, just the worst thing, one of the worst things you can do to somebody. And it seemed that Long had a penchant for this kind of thing. During the investigation, they found somebody who was an inmate with Long who said that while he talked to Long in prison, they had been watching TV and saw coverage of the Charlotte and Cinda disappearance. And he said that Long turned to him and said, if you cut the bodies up small enough and stick them in a rat hole, they'll never be found, which is as close to a confession as you can get and super eerie in retrospect. Long was also trained as a butcher during another prison term years earlier in California. Investigators also brought in one of the survivors of a kidnapping that Long was serving time for. Again, this was a 16-year-old and a 12-year-old, and they were hitchhiking together on a Wyoming highway. He picked them up on September 19th of 1984. He told them that he was going to get them some food and take them back to his house so they could clean up and get something to eat. When they got to his house, the 16-year-old said that Long offered her $100 to have sex with him. She said no, that she was not that kind of girl, and then he pulled a gun on both her and the 12-year-old. The girl said that Long then beat the 12-year-old, tied both of them up, and raped the 16-year-old girl. Once Long was asleep, the 16-year-old was able to sneak to a neighbor's house for help. Soon after, they all heard Long's pickup truck drive away. When the police arrived and searched his home, Long and the 12-year-old, whose name was Sharon Bald Eagle, were both gone, and Sharon has never been found.
along with the pattern of behavior, police had physical evidence from the car that Long had rented. First off, the car matched the description the boys gave. Then there were several scalp hairs that were found in the trunk. So some of those came back as a match to Cinda, but none of them conclusively could be linked to Charlotte. Investigators also used luminol to find bloodstains in the trunk of the car. And dude, it's interesting. This was actually the first time in Oklahoma that they used luminol. So that's, I don't know.
Seems kind of late to me. Yeah.
Yeah, nerdy thing to do. Elliot said, we were able to show, and in my opinion did show, that he did this multiple times and perhaps killed as many as 20 or more young girls. End quote. Elliot also said, we believed then, and I believe today, we had the right man. That's why everyone was so shocked when the case was thrown out by the judge. Yeah, this took a turn. So in the middle of the trial, the judge announced that there was insufficient evidence to prove that Long was responsible, and he granted the defense's request to throw out the charges. Dude, how in the world does a judge say that there was insufficient evidence? They found some Charlotte's hairs and blood in the back of the car that matched the description that the boys gave who saw him drive off with these two girls.
And that we know was in his name, under his name for a rental. He was in the area and in prison for the same crime.
And he admitted that he was in town the day before, so... yeah, man, I really would like to go and talk to this judge to say why. Like, why do you not feel like this was enough? I think this is more than enough.
I do too. I think there's a time for a judge to do this when it's really not going to result in anything, when it's going to be extra trauma for the family that's going to have no results and they're not going to get the right person. I think sometimes this can be a responsible decision, but here I just can't wrap my mind around it. You have to let the jury make this decision. I'm trying to wrap my mind around where he was. Did he think this was going to be not guilty and he was just trying to prevent double jeopardy? I don't know.
Yeah, it really doesn't make sense to me. I mean, we have so much more than, in my opinion, circumstantial evidence. We have physical evidence putting at least one of those girls in the trunk of his car. So, yeah, maybe the charges have to be thrown out for Cinda because there wasn't any of her hairs that were found in the car.
But they disappeared together. I feel like that's still enough. I hear what you're saying. I know you're not arguing for
right,
that. But.
Right. So I genuinely do not understand this. So what's more frustrating is the prosecution and the families of Charlotte and Cinda, of course, they were absolutely devastated. But because of the dismissed charges, Long could never be tried again for the murder of these girls.
And this is a legal decision I don't understand.
I saw this recently where it's like dismissed with prejudice.
With prejudice. That's what happened with the Alec Baldwin case. Yeah. But that was a big deal because it happens so rarely. And with prejudice usually means there was prosecutorial misconduct.
Right. So maybe that's what was going on here, but I genuinely do not understand this. So they... You know, the families had to comfort themselves knowing that even if justice wasn't going to be served for their children, at least in their mind, this was the guy and he was already going to be in prison serving life for the other two girls anyway. But at the same time, that means justice was never going to be carried out if, in fact, Long was the guy.
Yeah, this is a decision that I just do not understand logically, ethically, or legally. And, I mean, they're right. He did end up dying in prison of natural causes in 1993. He was 58 at the time. He had been a suspect in several other unsolved cases. I think you had the number like 20. Some 20 missing girls have been potentially attributed back to him. The bodies of Charlotte and Cinda have never been found. Elliot described losing this case as one of the lowest moments of his career. He said it was a sleepless night that night. The only thing I remember from this ruling was that he said the prosecution picked him green, meaning that we filed the case before we had enough evidence. After the trial, Elliot went to visit the families of the girls. He felt an incredible amount of guilt for not bringing their children home and for not bringing justice to their cases. That's when the family told him something that Long did on his way out of the courtroom that day. According to the family, as he walked out of the courtroom, he walked toward the parents of the two girls, leaned in, and whispered, "Only I know where those bodies are, and I'm not talking."
This makes me want to just murder someone in court. Is that, I mean, I don't care if that's wrong of me or not.
I'm surprised there wasn't at least an attempt at that as a reaction.
Sorry, man. I'm going to go on record talking about being at court. If I'm sitting there and that man walked by and said that to me, I will be spending the rest of my life in jail.
Yeah.
I would murder him on the spot.
And I'm surprised that, like I said, there wasn't an attack, but I totally, just the reaction of that. And oh my goodness, if that doesn't.
Why do you not stand up and say, "Your Honor, this guy just said."
Yeah. Yeah. And at that point, is it too late? I mean, could he be charged for something else, disposing of bodies or lying or perjuring himself? I don't know. Like, it's just an absolute mess and a disgrace to the justice system that this played out like it did. Elliot, obviously, he already knew he had the right guy. This confirms it. And he said that since they'd never been found, if there's one thing that he could do before he passes from this earth, it would be to find those little girls just to be able to tell their families what happened.
I pray, man, that somehow, some way, these kids are found. I mean, obviously, they're no longer with us. I think everyone knows that. But at least it would bring some sense of closure. And my heart breaks for these families that, you know, not only do they not know where their daughters are, but they know that the man who's responsible for their murders is not going to face any justice for them. Now, yes, he was in prison. He never got out. Still not justice. And to say that on the way out, man, there's a special layer of hell for that guy.
Amen. I can't rebut that in any way whatsoever. This is, after doing this all this time, somebody doing that just still flies all over me to say what
I'm
he
like,
said.
I'm like mad.
Yeah, I can tell. You're turning a new shade of red.
Yeah. So,
unfortunately, that wasn't the end of tragedy at the Oklahoma State Fair. So we'll take another quick break and come back and bring you more horrifying stories from Oklahoma.
It was 6 years after Charlotte and Cinda went missing, and there would be two other girls who were having a great day at the Oklahoma State Fair when tragedy would strike again. This time, sisters Cheryl Jeaner and Lisa Pennington went to the fair on September 23rd, 1987. Cheryl was 25 years old, and Lisa was just 17. Their brother Alan said, quote, "I remember both of them had beautiful smiles. Both were flamboyant. They enjoyed music and enjoyed life, and they were still so young," end quote. The girls were seen at the fair, and then they were thought to have left with two men named Doug Lawson and Lane Henley. Henley said the girls came to his house to party. Lawson said that when he went to sleep in the morning, Henley told Lawson that the girls had made a late-night phone call, and they had someone pick them up at a 7-Eleven that was just 4 blocks away. 27 days later, the girls were found, but they were found shot to death and in shallow graves.
Yeah, and again, these are, I mean, for all intents and purposes, adult young women, 25 and 17. I realize that's not 18, but these aren't two 13-year-olds. So them leaving with the men isn't necessarily the issue here. It's obviously the fact that they disappeared and their whereabouts were unknown for almost a month before they were found. The family asked longtime friend and private investigator Dorian Quillen to help find the girls. He initially would say that they left with two guys and they were alive and well when they left. They went to this guy's house in the suburb of the city called Britton, and they were never seen again by anyone who knew them. 5 years after the girls were murdered, Doug Lawson was arrested not for charges in the case of these girls, but for drug charges. And when he was brought in, he quickly started talking. And to get a lighter sentence, he told authorities that Lane Henley had murdered Cheryl and Lisa. He said the four of them went back to Henley's house that night, where they all drank beer, smoked weed, did other drugs like cocaine. And Lawson said that later that night, Henley murdered both girls. He was living in Dallas at the time of this arrest and of Lawson's confession about what happened, or I guess Lawson's accusation against him. But they ended up arresting Henley and charging him with first-degree murder and extradited him back to Oklahoma.
Then, about a year and a half later, right before Henley's trial was set to begin, Lawson said that he made up the entire story. So Henley was released, and he moved to Roswell, New Mexico. Lawson, however, was sentenced to 5 years in jail for perjury. So Quillen said that based on the stories and investigation at the time, he believes that he knows what happened to Cheryl and Lisa. We believe there may have been a sexual assault that night, and one of the girls saw it and began fighting on behalf of their sister, and then things got out of hand. And that is the story that we understand. In 2022, which would be 35 years later, the families asked for the investigation to be reopened. There was a legal expert who chimed in and said, quote, "It is my understanding that they have reached out to law enforcement agencies who have been either unwilling or unable to continue the investigation. This is their opportunity, and this is the vehicle by which they can go forward and nudge the investigation," end quote. Friends believe that one of the men is dead, but the other man responsible is still alive. Again, this is allegedly. And allegedly still brags about getting away with murder. Quillen would go on to say, quote, "If someone wants to take credit for this, it is time to start believing them," end quote. And I completely agree with that. If there is someone out there bragging about getting away with murder, well, then let's just bring them to court and see what they have to say then. That's me talking, John here, not anybody else.
No, I'm on board.
Quinlan said again, quote, "It has been 35 years and they need to start looking into it instead of saying that it's just hearsay," end quote. You know, what's the harm? If you have people telling you, hey, this person is saying that they're responsible and they've gotten away with it, where's the harm in bringing them in for questioning?
Yeah.
You know, you really don't have anything but hearsay, but if you look into it more, maybe you'll have something concrete.
Maybe you will. And again, these are the last two guys to see them alive. Anytime that that's the case, that's usually where you spend the majority of your time early on. Senator from Oklahoma named Carrie Hicks also weighed in on the case. On her website, she talks about her continued efforts to support the response to unsolved violent crimes. On her website, it said, "There's a saying that justice delayed is justice denied, and it's true. Some of Oklahoma's cold cases have been unresolved for decades, like the murders of Cheryl Ginzer and Lisa Pennington, who vanished from the state fair in 1987. They were murdered. Their bodies were later discovered in a shallow grave. Their parents died, still awaiting justice for their daughters." The staff of Senator Hicks has conducted an interim study on delayed justice. And for those who don't know, an interim study is kind of a formal examination, gathering evidence about policies and legislative issues that they put together in order to take it to their to the politician and say, this seems to have something to it. There is a there. You should look more into it. And that helps them to make decisions and find out things to move forward with, because, you know, they're kind of inundated with requests. In Senator Hicks's interim study, the Senate Public and Safety Committee interviewed Quillen, and he said that he had talked with known witnesses, he had DNA and ballistic evidence, and he believed that the case of the murdered sisters could be solved. He pointed out a law in Georgia that, if passed in Oklahoma, would give families the ability to have cold cases reinvestigated, which this came up in 2022. I feel like now is the time to revisit cold cases with the increase in technology that's happening more and more. And it seems like Oklahoma just needs a little boost in that direction.
Absolutely. I mean, in my job, like, we are trying to find people who know children who, for whatever reason, no fault of their own, I will say, are lingering in foster care and have not been adopted when their biological parents and no other family could take them in. And it's tragic. So what happens is if we've been on a case for more than a year, we're not doing what's called an investigation, but we begin to start over again. It's like, I just want you to open this case up again with a fresh set of eyes.
Right.
So forget everything you know. Start this case from scratch and let's try it again. Are there any stones that you haven't flipped over? Is there anything we could do that we just didn't do for whatever reason the last time?
Or is there information that's available now that wasn't the last time?
Absolutely. And so we call that revisiting. It's not an investigation. So, but I mean, it's what you have to do to get results sometimes.
Right.
If you just keep on going and going with no leads, you may never turn up anything new. So I think it's okay. I get staffing is limited. I get that there are more reasons that you can't do this than there are that you should, but it's the right thing to do. If there's still people out there who could face justice if they were responsible, you have the due diligence to do this.
And we're at a point now where you may have evidence that can be tested that you didn't know existed because at the time it was gathered, it seemed worthless. So I think there's just so much value for now in revisiting these old cases that closure rates are kind of the focus a lot of times in these precincts and in these districts. And I think they can close a lot of old ones with a little bit of science.
I don't want to get too political, but I will say there should never be a reason why we don't run these tests, right? Like if you say we just don't have the funding or the resources, we can find money, make it happen. Like,
right.
Don't let that be the reason. We have to run these things and get answers. And just letting it sit in the box for two more decades isn't doing anybody any favors.
Amen.
Man, these cases have just got me on every kind of soapbox. You're
fired up this month.
Quillen said that the lowest possible number of unsolved cases that he could find in Oklahoma was 1,000, but he believes the actual number could be twice that. He said, quote, "That's a lot of people, and that's a lot of empty seats at the holidays. That's a lot of people missing weddings and births and all the things that make up our lives," end quote. Quillen is absolutely right, and those empty seats deserve our attention. Cheryl and Lisa are buried in the Gary Cemetery next to their parents. Their brother would go on to say, quote, "We know someone knows something, and it is time that someone steps forward and we get the type of closure to this case," end quote. So, these cases are tough. Both of them, two sets of young ladies who were gone way before their time. Neither of these cases saw any kind of justice.
Right. And I think in theory, we know what happened to Charlotte and Cinda in a very definitive way that I don't know that needs to be reopened or would be called to be reopened. The main suspect cannot be tried again to things that I fully disagree with. But this one, the sisters, Cheryl and Lisa, their parents are gone. Their brother's still around. Justice is so possible in this case. I don't know how you ignore it.
Especially if the alleged perpetrator is out there allegedly saying that he got away with murder.
Yeah.
That's both cases have that in common as well. One guy leaves court and says to the family, "I'm the only one who knows where your daughters are, and yeah, I'm dying with that." And then if this is true, then allegedly, there's a guy out there saying that he's responsible and got away with it. So in both cases, I feel like we were so close and just didn't get them.
Yeah, we'd love to hear your feedback. Maybe you have a different take than we do, and you think our excitement is misplaced. And I say excitement in a very negative way, not being pumped up, but us getting a little fired up here is misplaced. So we'd love to hear you say that. Otherwise, if you agree with us, I even more so enjoy that.
Yeah.
Right? We would love to have some more 5-star reviews. If you've ever wondered what you can do to help us out with the show, that is it. Make reviews for us. It's also a great way to give us feedback directly, to recommend new cases over on Apple Podcasts, on social media, comment over on Spotify if you're over there, because there's not really as much of a review system, but Anything you can add will be very beneficial to our show, and we are forever grateful for those things.
Absolutely. If you find yourself with extra time around the holidays and need something to binge listen to, well, I could throw you some other ideas. But if you're interested, check out our Patreon. For as little as $3 a month, you can get access to all of our bonus episodes, which is nearly 7 years worth of exclusive episodes only available to our Patreon members. You can binge those for several days and have a lot of fun.
We appreciate your support all year round and really just want to wish you a very, very Merry Christmas.
God bless you. And until next crime, this has been True Crime Cast.
You've listened to True Crime Cast, distributed by Stoveleg Media. Check out Stoveleg.com to find out more about your hosts and to find other podcasts to listen to. Stoveleg Media, igniting conversation.